Well, greetings, everybody. I'm Impressionist Jim Meskimen, and I'm delighted to be your Master of Ceremonies today for what I know will be an interesting session with some really terrific speakers.
Indeed. That's what we've got. And he's here, Jim Meskimen. Welcome to WGN.
Hey, well, you got my attention. Geez, what an introduction.
Have you ever been introduced by yourself on a radio show?
Not quite in that way. No, I don't say that's the first. Thanks, Steve.
Well, I hope it's okay with you that when I was describing earlier, you didn't hear it. You weren't here on hold yet. But I'll tell you, I said he's an actor who you would know if he was walking down the face, you'd say on the street, if he's walking, I know that guy. But you may
if
not...
I was walking down your face, you would know who I was. Absolutely.
But if you're walking down the street, people say, I know him, but I may not know his name. You're a character actor. That's a wonderful
thing. I'm a character actor.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm the son of character actors, so I respect the condition, as it were.
Well,
if you can't be a star, at least be a character actor.
So talk to me about America's Mom. Tell everyone who your mother is. She's been on the show.
Well, Marion Ross, your listeners may remember from Happy Days, a little show called Happy Days back in the 70s and 80s, and Forever After. It was a big change in our life when she got that job. But she'd been a working actor herself for, 20 or 30 years before that. And she raised us as a single mom. She was a great example. She went on to become, quite heralded and iconic. And even today, people tell me, gosh, I love your mom. Your mom raised me. That's what I hear all the time, and she hears that all the time from people, that she raised them in that she, I guess that means that she stood in for an absent parent or a parent that didn't quite measure up to the standard or whatever. I don't know. But it's quite an interesting thing that she achieved, and we treasure her so much. She's almost 94.
How is she doing?
She's doing fine. Thank you.
Great.
And she sends her love.
Oh, great. Please send her Chicago's love as well. So I'm watching a clip that I was sent, and you're in...
How rude. You're supposed to be interviewing me, and you're watching clips. Fine. You know what? I'm going on Instagram. To hell with you.
Well, be careful what you say on Instagram. And if you post that clip, people will say, I'm incredibly impressed. The show is called Gaslit. It's on Stars. And it's all about the Watergate hearings, specifically about Martha Mitchell and that point in time that she was a whistleblower, or the whistleblowers all around her, I guess is a better way to put it. That's Julia Roberts, of all people, who play that role. Sean Penn is also in this. This is not your first time around, your first rodeo in a Richard Nixon event, is it?
No, I've, because of my... my age, I guess. I remember the Nixon years very well. I was a teenager, and in these days, I do Richard Nixon's voice for various projects. I did it recently for a very funny podcast called Space 1969, and I've done it for the show Timeless, and also what's the other show? There's an Apple show about For All Mankind. I've wound up doing Nixon quite a lot for All Mankind. And I was in Ron Howard's Frost Nixon, where I was part of the Nixon team under Frank Langella, who played Nixon at the time. And now I'm in the Gaslit, where we're trying to bring Nixon down. I was supposed to do Nixon's voice for it as well in some scenes, but wiser minds prevailed, and they wound up using archival recordings, of which there are, as we know, far too many. So I think that was a good choice.
What was it like to, first of all, kind of go back in time? Here's what I mean. I was watching these clips, and by the way, our phone number 312-981-7200. If you have questions, you can call or text, of course, and talk with Jim Meskimen. That's who I'm talking with. And I certainly thought, oh, yeah, I remember that part. I remember that part. Are there any, as the story unfolds, it's very different than what's going on today, but as I was watching even just the clips, I said to myself, and I do talk to myself periodically, I said, there are some similarities to what's happening today.
And then what did you say to yourself?
I said, I need to ask Jim about this.
And then I said, yeah, of course. Well, you know, the basic, I think anybody who's been around long enough and can see the cyclical nature of political woes and the ups and downs of cultures, you know, recognizes that these things are cyclical and they don't always come from the same types of individuals. But there is a sort of a mankind problem, I would say. It is a general human being problem of corruption and how to handle it. And, you know, the people that are sometimes in power are very corrupt, and somebody has to make order out of it. Now, I think that people are all basically good. So eventually it does get cleaned up and exposed, and the truth will out. And I think that's what projects like Gaslit are great for, because they show you another viewpoint on it. We can communicate with it. We can look at it from the viewpoint of history and make our own determination. That's another great thing about art. You know, we can sort of make up our minds and gather opinions that way.
So when a movie like this is being made, I'm curious, it's not a documentary, it's a movie. So
not at all.
How much license is taken, do you think? It's a silly question because you weren't there. Is it a lot?
A lot. Yeah, absolutely a lot. It's you know, they use historical references. They use biographies of, like Gordon Liddy, for example, is written extensively. And most of the principals of that time, John Dean, even Nixon, they all wrote biographies. They all wrote their version of it. But, you know, somebody has to go and pick and choose and say, well, this is pertinent and this isn't, or this is reliable and this isn't, or this is dramatic and fun and has great storytelling and theatrical possibilities, and this isn't, you know. So, yeah, there's a lot of pick and choose.
Imagine the theatrical possibilities 10 years from now about everything going on today. So, what was it like working with Julia Roberts?
Oh, it was very pleasant. I mean, I was interrogating her as Senator Gurney and giving her a hard time. And she was holding her own. We were separated by quite a distance. So we weren't exactly in each other's laps. But
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Those are the breaks. But it was a great experience. The director is a guy named Matt Ross, and you should keep his name on file, because I think he's really going to just continue to excel. All the directing he did was fantastic, and I was just really pleased to work with him. He's an actor himself, and so like Ron Howard, like my friend Ron Howard, who I've worked for in five pictures, you know, he knows what to tell you, so that you he doesn't waste a lot of words. You know, it's very quick communication between those two people, and Matt's the same way. So it was cool.
I have a hunch, but by the time we're done with this interview, I will have interviewed like 12 people, which is not a bad thing. So
yes, and you haven't even gotten to the Brits yet, so let's move it along.
I'm moving it along. I'm trying. Sean Penn was also in this movie. It seems that you talk about, first of all, do you make movies depending on who the cast member is, and then you can do impressions of those people?
Yes, that you figured it out. Yeah, that's, I only accept work. Only accept work from people that will later pad my one-man show. That's otherwise, I'm not interested.
If you can't do an impression of him, so how about Sean Penn? It seems there's no more intense an actor to work with.
You know, he's very focused. He's very serious, but he's also very playful. And I had a great, great afternoon working with him. We were working together on a golf course. We did get to get fairly close. You know, I could hear him whisper, you know. And we had a very nice scene together. Yep. And it's interesting. When I first met him, of course, he's under a lot of prosthetic makeup designed brilliantly by Kazuhiro. And it was the guy that did the Winston Churchill makeup on Gary Oldman.
Well, you wouldn't even recognize him as Sean Penn.
Well, that's my point. When I met him, he came up to me in the room that we were waiting in, and he said, "Hey, I'm Sean." And I said, "If you say so." Because there was no evidence. Really, you had to just look at him in the eyes and kind of figure out that it was Sean Penn. But all the physical clues were askew. And it was nice for me, because I found I didn't probably get as starstruck and nervous as I would have been, because as far as I was concerned, Sean Penn hadn't entered the room yet.
All right, so when we come back from a break, I want to know the actor you've worked with that you were most starstruck by. I also want to talk about Phil Donahue. That's right, Phil Donahue. All of that when we come back with Jim Meskimen on WGN. Talking to Jim Meskimen. Jim, this story is just, this is a news story. I want to read it to you. A restaurant created by KFC founder Harlan Sanders for his wife decades ago is now for sale. Claudia Sanders' Dinner House in Shelbyville, Kentucky, hit the market, citing a statement from the listing agents describing the nearly 25,000-foot restaurant and banquet hall. It's for sale. Are you looking at buying this?
Well, now that you mention it, I had not read that article, but that's something I'm going to get my business people to jump on for sure.
How did
be a nice piece of real estate, I reckon, or Steve.
How did you ever meet the guy Harlan Sanders who played, who really was? He didn't play any. That was him.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't playing around.
No,
that was him. I never had the honor. Never had the honor to meet him. But of course, when I grew up, he was doing his own advertising, his own commercials, and so when the opportunity came up to audition for that role to do the voice, mind you, I don't physicalize the Colonel. We're rather different physical types, but I do his voice rather well, and I remember it very vividly. So it was a pretty easy jump for me to translate into that particular role. And I've been doing it now for about 6 years.
How does it happen where, I mean, as a teenager, did you begin to, that kid in school sounds like this, so I'm going to sound like this. I mean, how do you begin doing impersonations?
Yeah, you know, like a lot of stand-up comics, which I'm not, but a lot of stand-up comics say that they learned how to make their fellow students laugh, and they imitated their teachers. I certainly imitated my teachers. And you do that, I think, as a kind of a self-preservation technique more than anything else, because you kind of have to put up with whatever they say and do what they say and listen to them all day long. So it's nice to have the release of being able to switch chairs, as it were, and talk like them for a while. Not to their face, probably. That doesn't work, but at least on your off hours, on the recess field where you're with your chums. So, yeah, when I was a teenager, and then I didn't really take it seriously or think that it was going to be my life path, particularly. I originally was going to be a cartoonist, and that was what I really liked. And I still do some cartooning today, and I did it professionally for a while, but So I didn't think, wow, I'm going to be like Rich Little. I'm going to have a Vegas gig, and I'm going to put on a powder blue tuxedo and really live that life.
Who was your favorite teacher to imitate, and what did he or she sound like?
We had a shop teacher named Mr. Fackler, Dave Fackler, and he had a big beard. He's kind of a hippie at the time, and he'd say, okay, guys, shut up a minute. I'm going to talk to you about this printing press here.
You sound exactly
Fackler.
Yeah, you nailed it. That is Mr. Fackler, if I've ever heard Mr. Fackler.
Now you've heard it.
I've heard it. So,
there you go.
I teased that you would tell me the actor that maybe you were most in awe of that you've worked with. You've worked with so many.
Yeah, I have. I have to say, I've always had a very special place in my heart for the actor George C. Scott.
Mm.
And my father had acted in a play with him on Broadway before I was born, just before I was born. And so he had kind of called my attention to George C. Scott's performances early on in my life in movies. You say, that's George C. Scott. That's the guy I worked with. And I began to appreciate what a fantastic actor George C. Scott was. And so I had the opportunity to work in a movie with George C. Scott.
Wow. What movie?
It was the last movie that he ever did. It was Inherit the Wind, the version of Inherit the Wind with Jack Lemmon that he did for Showtime.
Yes, indeed.
And
wow.
I had seen him on Broadway by that point. I'd actually met him before. I went backstage one time to, you know, congratulate him and just to meet him. And then he was always very generous and gracious. And working with him was just a tremendous pleasure, both because it was an echo of what my father had experienced working on stage in a courtroom drama, as I did. My dad's play was a courtroom drama, too. And just to watch him every day work with full commitment, although essentially he was a dying man, was extraordinarily inspiring.
Hmm. Jack Lemmon, too.
And he also told a lot of dirty jokes in between.
Did he really?
Oh, it was a 360-degree experience.
And Jack Lemmon as well?
And Jack Lemmon as well, who was, by that time, very doddery, but a tremendous performer. Although I have to say, he couldn't remember his lines like George did. And he did a lot of retakes.
Oh, really? I'm in Chicago, WGN Radio Chicago, the home of Phil Donahue. Why am I asking you about Phil Donahue?
Well, Steve, I can only imagine it's because I just performed as Phil Donahue. I did my, it'll be an appearance on a show called, what was called the Untitled Chippendales Project. And I believe they do have a title now, but it has Chippendales in it. God knows what it's been called at this point, but I got to portray Phil Donahue and be in a room full of, you know, women that were grasping at half-naked men's buns.
And you must have gotten a lot of steps also, because as I recall, he had that long, skinny microphone, and he used to run up and down the steps saying, your question.
Yeah. That's right. Boy, he was the man in daytime chat shows, wasn't he?
Yeah, and still, I mean, frankly, if you actually watch those shows, and I didn't at that time, but I've seen reruns, he was a very good interviewer. And, you know, what made him a good interviewer, I think, is he would ask questions. I tried to do this too, actually. Not that I'm in anywhere near the same league. The questions that people would want to know. So what makes for a great actor?
Oh, wow. That's a hard right. I think a great actor is someone who can create a unique and a memorable character that is convincing enough to make the audience feel like they understand his experience. And, gosh, we have so many great actors. I think that actors are somewhat eclipsed sometimes by the reputation of Hollywood, you know, the bad examples and the bad behavior and stuff like that, which is totally separate from what a person's talent is like and what they can bring and manifest. And I'm always inspired by really great performances. And I've had the chance to work with some really terrific actors. I've worked with Tom Hanks. I've worked with Matthew McConaughey. I've worked with Ed Harris. I worked with Ed Harris on Apollo 13. And, you know, we didn't lose a man on his watch.
Well, I don't want to lose a man on my watch either, or be late to the news, which is why I'm cutting you short. But Jim Meskimen, gratitude infinitely for you taking time out on a Sunday afternoon to join us.
My pleasure, Steve. Thanks so much.
Thank you.